Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Some of the world's greatest tennis players are rallying in support of bushfire relief efforts ahead of next week's Australian Open. Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, and Serena Williams were among those who participated in a Rally for Relief charity event Wednesday at Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne, Australia. Nadal told the fans about the money he and Federer have pledged.
Yeah, talking with Roger a couple of hours ago, we decided to give $250,000 to the barn fires relief together. So hopefully that keep inspiring the people to support this terrible disaster that we were going through, and helps to recover all the things that we need.
The terrible disaster that Rafa mentioned is one of Australia's worst bushfire seasons on record. The fires have burned for months and killed 28 people, destroying more than 2,500 homes and razing forests and farmland the size of Bulgaria. Swiss star Roger Federer says his heart goes out to those affected by the fires.
It's been hard to watch, you know, and as you get it through the news, you never know how bad it really is. But then you hear more and more about it and you get the sense that it's really, really bad. And then you get down here and you get really speak to the people as well who have been affected. And it's been difficult, you know. You wish that this doesn't happen in your country. And in Switzerland, we're quite lucky. We don't have these kind of extreme situations. So always happy to help, always happy to lend my time or my money for that matter. And it was an absolute pleasure to be here tonight with Nick and all the other legends of the game, and at least do my fair share.
Roger Federer mentioned Nick. He's referring to Australian tennis star Nick Kyrgios.
It's been an emotional couple of weeks, obviously, you know, through the ATP Cup. It was practically why I was playing so hard, you know. I just wanted to, you know, send a message, you know. I was just at dinner and I wrote the tweet and I said that was the opportunity for me to, I think, use my platform. And then the whole Aussie team got behind it, obviously, Alex De Minaur, John Peers, John Millman, all those guys. And then I woke up the next day and it kind of exploded, and it was so emotional. You know, back home when I was in Canberra, I couldn't even go outside. You know, it was emotional, and I'm just so happy that we had Roger, you know, Novak, Rafa, some of the greats to get behind it, and everyone around the world at the moment. You know, the awareness has grown, and I think we're doing everything we possibly can to overcome this together.
Nick Kyrgios has pledged $200 for every ace he hits this month for the Australian bushfire relief effort. Earlier this week, Serena Williams announced she had donated the $43,000 in prize money she won at a tournament in New Zealand to the bushfire relief effort. Serena and the other top players are preparing for the year's first major tennis tournament, the Australian Open, which starts in Melbourne on Monday. In Melbourne Wednesday, smoke from the bushfires blanked the city in a thick gray haze before a clearing rainstorm. The smoke disrupted the Australian Open's qualifying matches for a second successive day. Slovenian tennis player Dalila Jakupovic collapsed in a coughing fit and was forced to retire from her qualifying match.
I have no asthma or breathing problems. I never experienced something like this, like I had yesterday. I mean, it was really scary. I like couldn't breathe. I didn't know what to do. I had the feeling like I'm gonna collapse on the court, and I was really scared, I have to say. And the whole match was tough for me to breathe, to get some fresh air, to get some air at all. So yeah, was tough conditions. Very. I understand, like, no one from us had these kind of conditions before. We are used to pollution, like we play in China, we play in more polluted countries, but I mean, this is smoke is something different, and for sure we are not used to it. And I think, I mean, citizens and everyone was advised to stay inside, and we didn't expect that we will be playing yesterday.
Slovenian tennis player Dalila Jakupovic was leading her qualifying match against Swiss opponent Stephanie Vogel 6-4 and 5-6 when she slumped to her knees at the back of the blue hard court, suffering breathing problems. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The countdown continues for the Tokyo Olympics, the year's biggest international sporting event. We're now 191 days away to the multi-sports jamboree in Japan. In Tokyo Wednesday, the ticket designs for the Games and the Paralympics were unveiled. Organizers say the simple ticket designs feature the pictograms of each individual event and come in four colors, red, blue, purple, and green, which represent each of Japan's four seasons. The organizers say the ticket designs are also inspired by the creation of fabrics for kimono, Japanese traditional formal wear. The organizer said Wednesday that nearly 4.5 million tickets have been sold so far. It's not clear how many tickets are available, but in Tokyo's bid to host the Olympics, Japanese officials said nearly 8 million would be available. Let's take a short break now for these Voice of America programming announcements.
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, slavery, racism, and colonialism fueled the emergence of Pan-Africanism. Reflections on the significance of Pan-Africanism on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here.
The Voice of America.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. January 17th is the birthday of the late, great Muhammad Ali, the three-time world heavyweight boxing champion and one of the most celebrated sports figures of the 20th century. Ali died in 2016 at the age of 74. VOA's Adam Phillips has been looking at the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali this week on the Sunny Side of Sports. During Tuesday's show, Adam reported how Ali suffered his first professional loss against Smokin' Joe Frazier in 1971 at Madison Square Garden in New York. Ali would then reel off 10 consecutive victories before facing another tough opponent in San Diego, California, as we hear now from Adam.
Undaunted, he then fought boxing great Ken Norton. Norton broke Ali's jaw, handing the erstwhile greatest a second stinging defeat. Jeffrey Sammons of New York University.
And many people thought that that might be the end of Ali's career. And that's also the allure of Ali, that he's able to come back from the brink, from adversity. And he would beat Ken Norton in a rematch. And Joe Frazier would not give Ali a shot at the championship. And Joe Frazier loses his crown to George Foreman, who was enormous and hulking and just destroyed Joe Frazier in two bouts.
George Foreman, now the heavyweight champion himself, did accept Ali's challenge. Ali was heavily favored to lose. The boxing world readied itself for a colossal contest between the two men. It was set for Kinshasa in the former Zaire, now called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ali called the contest the Rumble in the Jungle.
I think it was speaking to the historic role that Ali had played in terms of black nationalism, black pride.
Almost from the beginning, the African public favored Muhammad Ali over George Foreman. Sammons explains part of the cause.
George Foreman made the serious mistake of taking a German police dog with him to Zaire. And this dog symbolized oppression and white colonialism. So George Foreman became persona non grata. And there was this famous French chant by kids and others, Ali Bumbaye, Ali kill him.
In private, Ali lacked confidence. He spontaneously came to call on his friend, the photographer George Kolinsky, at his office.
And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I'm fighting George Foreman in Zaire. He's too big, he's too strong, he's too fast, he's too young, he's too quick, he's too big. There's no way I can beat him in this fight."
Kolinsky says he thought about it for a moment, then came up with a strategy that would become an Ali hallmark.
I said, "You know, Muhammad, all your life you've been training for this fight, but you didn't know it. Whenever I saw you working out, which are many, many times working out in a gym with your sparring partner, what you do is you lean against the ropes and you let your sparring partner hit you and hit you and hit you. What you do the night of the fight is the same thing. You lean against the ropes, just let them swing away, and you act like a dope on the ropes, like you're sick, like you're not well. And eventually he's going to tire himself out, then you knock him out." He said, "You mean you want me to be a rope-a-dope?" I said, "Okay, we'll call it rope-a-dope." And that's what happened when he fought George Foreman.
The fight took place in a football stadium under the moon. It was a brutal contest. But Ali sent Foreman to the floor in the eighth round and reclaimed his heavyweight title.
Muhammad Ali has done it! The great man has done it!
As ecstatic fans streamed to the ring, the commentator, David Frost, crowed, "The great man has done it! This is the most joyous scene in the history of boxing." Basking in this victory, Ali was invited to the White House to meet President Gerald Ford. A clear sign of Ali's rehabilitation in official eyes. But there were more challenges to come. Most famously, there would be Ali's epic rematch against Joe Frazier in October 75 in Manila, the Philippines. During the build-up to what became known as the Thriller in Manila, the animosity between the two men was electric.
"In a little sharp poem, it says there will be a killer and a thriller and a killer when I get the gorilla in Manila."
From the first bell, the men went at each other with unstoppable, constant, vicious energy. Ali finally won in the 15th round, but Jeffrey Sammons says both men paid a terrible price.
And Ali said about it that it was the closest thing to death that he had ever experienced or could imagine. And of course, we know that Ali had Parkinson's syndrome, which many believe was brought on by the brain trauma that he suffered.
There were more bouts. But George Kolinsky and others could not help but notice that Ali was slurring his speech and that his hands were unsteady.
And I said, "Muhammad Ali, why are you fighting? You're going to hurt yourself. You're already becoming hurt." And he said, in his whisper way, he said, "You know, the ring is my stage, and I'm the most famous person in the world to look at. If I didn't have the ring as my stage, if I stop fighting, everybody else is going to forget who I am. So I have to continue this way."
On more than one occasion, Ali attempted freelance diplomacy. In 1979, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, U.S. President Jimmy Carter called for a worldwide boycott of the 1980 Olympic Games in Moscow.
And he enlists Ali to go to Africa to convince African leaders that they should not participate in the 80 Olympics. The African leaders are, first of all, resentful of the fact that Jimmy Carter would send a boxer to do his bidding.
Sammons adds that many leaders were also bitter that the United States didn't boycott the 1976 Olympics in Montreal as a protest against New Zealand, which played cricket, rugby, and football with South Africa, then living under apartheid.
So they said, you wouldn't support us on the 76 Olympics in Montreal. We're not going to support you on the 80 Olympics in Moscow.
Ali fought his last fight in 1981, a shell of his former physical self. But as his Parkinson's worsened, he committed himself to humanitarian concerns. He represented UNICEF and the Special Olympics. In 1990, during the run-up to the first Gulf War, Ali successfully negotiated with Saddam Hussein for the release of American hostages. He also fundraised tirelessly for medical research into Parkinson's. Photographer George Kolinsky says Ali was almost universally revered later in life. That's why Ali was asked to light the torch inaugurating the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta, Georgia.
He represented goodness, he represented a champion, and he represented a person that the world loved. And when he held that torch up, shaking from his Parkinson's, people began to love Muhammad Ali more and more and more. It certainly was one of the shining moments of his life. There's no question in the world that he is the greatest of all time.
When Muhammad Ali died, the world lost a man many considered to be the greatest athlete of the 20th century. The world also grieved for a principled, albeit flawed, human being who truly combined the beauty of the butterfly with the sting of the bee. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I really enjoyed your Muhammad Ali feature.
My name is Daniel Igale, President of the Nigeria Wrestling Federation, World and Olympic Champion. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach Daniel Igale. More tennis news now on the Sunny Side of Sports. Ahead of next week's Australian Open, Craig Gabriel caught up with one of Australia's greatest tennis players, 85-year-old Ken Rosewall. Rosewall won 8 Grand Slam singles titles before retiring in 1980. Craig did the interview at the Ken Rosewall Arena in Sydney, Australia. Here's Craig.
Kenny Rosewall, good to be with you in your home, the Ken Rosewall Arena. How does that feel?
It's pretty exciting for me. You know, I've been down here a few times because I'm living up at the Gold Coast at the moment now, and to come down and see all the material and the framework that they needed to put this roof in position, it was just amazing. So to see it in its finished condition is just it's really humbling for me, because as I said, you know, there have been so many top ladies and men players from New South Wales over a long period of time that they could have named the centre after, because they did a lot for tennis in their day, and for the authorities to use my name on this centre is pretty humbling.
Kenny, can you believe it's 20 years now that this arena that's got your name on it was opened?
No, as I've gotten older myself, it seems a short time ago, but yeah, well, it was a long time coming to get this roof. I mean, the Tennis New South Wales had approached the government for funding, and eventually it came through, so it's made a big difference. It'll be more comfortable for the spectators, and certainly with 10,000 new seats here, the cover is going to create a fair bit of shade, so it won't be as hot for the players, won't be as hot for the spectators.
You just touched on a word. You said humbling to have this arena named after you, but do you still in one sense pinch yourself that you're one of the first Australians to have a tennis arena named after you?
I'd like to think that I'm representing all of the other New South Wales players, you know. I mean, I believe that, you know, Rod's stadium in Melbourne, I mean, he feels the same way. I mean, he did a lot for tennis with his performances and other activities, but, you know, here in Sydney. I mean, there's so many of my friends have been the top players, but anyway, it's really exciting to be part of it.
Kenny, I know you don't travel internationally anymore, but how much do you keep an eye on what's going on in world tennis?
Well, I'm probably like millions of others. I'm a bit of a couch potato, and so I see a fair bit of tennis on the TV, which fortunately with the modern technology you can do that now, watching tournaments all over the world pretty much all year round. I follow it fairly closely, certainly the Australian side of it more so than the others. But tennis has expanded, as you know. You know the game so well that you've seen it grow so much. And I always say, well, when tennis went back to the Olympics, it helped to expose the game of tennis to so many other countries, and that's why now we have championship players from every country in the world.
Yeah, that's exactly right, you know, because when that government started funding tennis because it got into the Olympic Games, I mean, places like Russia exploded, China. Who would have ever thought we'd see tennis players from China and then to see players from China actually winning majors as well? It was an incredibly important move, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right. I mean, you know, when the ATP was first started in the early 70s, I mean, I was part of the group that played in the Asian circuit, and we had tournaments all over Asia trying to more or less spread the word of tennis and, you know, try to get the ATP further established. So they've come along in leaps and bounds when they were able to run their own circuit, and something that basically I missed out on, but so did a lot of other older players. But I think it's going to be good.
All right, finally, Muscles. You had a hit, your white shirt, your tie, your trousers on, and you hit a few shots, you hit a few balls with Grigor Dimitrov and Jamie Murray. Are you hot and sweaty now?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm ready to go home and have a rest. Well, unfortunately, I've had a bit of shoulder trouble, and basically, as an older person, I'm like all the
mature
older,
age.
Older person, older people, they're not playing so much. So that was the first time in 4 years I've tried to hit a tennis ball. So that's about the way it is.
Kenny, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Hall of Fame tennis player Ken Rosewall, who is still hitting shots at the age of 85, and Kenny was talking with Craig Gabriel in Sydney, Australia. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association action Tuesday night, the Los Angeles Clippers posted their 28th victory of the season, routing the visiting Cleveland Cavaliers in Los Angeles. The Clippers were led by their star forward, who scored a season high in points, as we hear now from the AP's Mark Myers.
Kawhi Leonard scored 43 as the Clippers crushed the Cavaliers 128-103. It took Leonard just three quarters of action to amass his season high in points. The star forward made 14 of 22 shots, including six threes, as LA got the lead up to as high as 36.
It felt good to get a win. That's most important. We show some good things on the defensive end, and we just got to keep having some carryover.
The Clips reached the season's halfway mark with a 28-13 record. Colin Sexton led Cleveland with 25. Mark Myers, Los Angeles.
Thanks, Mark. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks won their NBA best 36th game of the season. Giannis and the Bucks routed the New York Knicks 128-102. Giannis was on the court for only 22 minutes, but that was enough time for him to score 37 points. Giannis Antetokounmpo, the NBA's reigning most valuable player. And that wraps up the January 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer PJ Elliott. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, slavery, racism, and colonialism fueled the emergence of Pan-Africanism. Reflections on the significance of Pan-Africanism on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The 62nd Annual Grammy Awards Show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists in Chicago discovered the oldest solid material ever found on Earth, trapped inside a meteorite that fell in Australia 50 years ago. What they found are grains of stardust, microscopic remnants of stars that died billions of years ago that can go on to help form new stars, planets, or other objects like meteorites. The ancient bits of stardust are actually tiny grains of pre-solar silicon carbide that were created long before our sun formed 4.6 billion years ago. To determine the age of the stardust, the scientists measured its exposure to high-energy cosmic rays that fly through the galaxy. Using that dating technique, the researchers found the grains of stardust are between 4.6 to 7 billion years old. The scientists' findings were published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.